Things over to Robin Snell.
Great. So how many of you here are from oral health? How many of you are from aging? That's sad. One of the reasons why I haven't come to APHA in a very long time. I don't think that public health, and I'm a DRPH, so I'm a bona fide public health person, been doing this for 35 years, I don't think they get that aging and elderly are a major population in public health. And for those of you who don't get it, yesterday in Post, front page, a world growing and growing grayer. This is it, folks. Japan is already almost 25% elderly. In the next 15 years, they're going to be 40% elderly. We are young relative to Europe and Japan, but we're getting there. And in many of our communities, Western Pennsylvania, parts of Florida, Iowa, we're well over 25 to 30% elderly. So if you don't get it, we're going to start to get it. And all of our deficit reduction issues, all of the contention around Medicare and Social Security, have to do with the aging of the population. This is the major demographic change in the history of the world. And I know we love to focus on children, but the reality is that from a public health perspective, this is going to be the biggest issue that we deal with. So hopefully some of you oral health folks will be shifting into also recognizing aging, and maybe we'll get a few more people who acknowledge or are focused on aging in public health here in the next session. So, let me move to, this is really from Sartre, but it is, the more sand has escaped from the hourglass of our life, the clearer we should see through it, meaning that there is something really important about aging. And when I was the Assistant Secretary for Aging, I used to tell Donna Shalala that if you don't die by the time you're 18 or whatever, you have a high probability of actually being elderly, and that the elderly are part of families, children and families, which was another struggle that I had in the department 15, 20 years ago, and it hasn't really changed that much. So I'm here to basically say that, and I think everybody has said the same thing, but I want to wrap it up around the policy perspective, that oral health has to be part of the aging services spectrum. And I think you've got a real battle. And I can tell you from being at the ADA meeting, the consensus meeting with the coalitions coming together, part of the battle is dentistry itself. But part of the battle is the whole system that is broken in every way for your average elderly person who is much higher risk for everything. That's not to say that most elderly are not healthy, because they are. But the reality is that the risks are greater. And as you start dealing with an elderly population, you've got these tremendous blurred boundaries between acute, primary, and long-term care and preventive services. They are all essential for healthy aging. In addition, there's a lot more focus with the elderly population on function and well-being, as well as health status. So you can begin to understand why oral health is so important. Because if you can't chew, if you've lost your dentures, and I can tell you I'm in hundreds of nursing homes every year. I work for an organization that has about 5,600 aging services providers. Many of these folks have no teeth. They're completely cognitively impaired. And this is the situation that we are left with. This is a cohort issue, by the way. I don't think we're going to see the same issues that we're seeing with this particular cohort of elderly because of the fact that they did not have good dental care. There was no fluoridization processes, nothing. So you're seeing some cohort effects, and I think that's an important issue that you're going to have to recognize, that new cohorts of elderly are going to have different issues. Particularly the 85 and over population right now. That is our most serious area for intervention. And while we have about 1.5 million people in nursing homes, the vast majority of the 85 and over are not in nursing homes. They are in the community, and they're not going to senior centers. So you need to be able to think about a surveillance mechanism that begins to recognize other ways of reaching particularly this very elderly population, much more at high risk. There is a broad range of services and supports. It occurred to me as I was sitting here, I'm now on an IOM panel for mental health, geriatric education, and I'm thinking we need one for oral health, geriatric education, and maybe that's another recommendation, is to think about how we get, and IOM is helpful in terms of bringing people together around these issues, but just as mental health has not had parity, and believe me, the rates of depression, substance abuse, alcoholism, serious issues among the elderly have not been addressed. The oral health issues, I think, need to be raised to that same level at this point. The other area around formal and informal care is so key. I think that Linda mentioned this, but it is often the family, just as with children, it is the family that is a very key partner in your work of trying to reach the elderly population, particularly as they become more elderly. The vast majority of very frail elderly people, the proxy is really the family in terms of all of the decision-making that is going on. So they are a piece of the pie that really has to be reached in terms of communication and partnering around intervention. With respect to the emerging issues and trends, I think understanding where things are going and how oral health can be interjected, there is tremendous effort at all states to rebalance the Medicaid dollars into home and community-based services. And while there's not as much room as there could be, I think there is much more opportunity with Medicaid waivers and creativity at the state level to figure out how we interject more oral health into particularly services that are provided to low-income people, which is the vast majority obviously being eligible for Medicaid. You have to either be poor or spend down to those levels. So thinking about as the state is rebalancing, and if you saw if any of you who know about the AARP's recent scorecard on long-term care across the states, it's a fabulous new document that's on their website, but you can see the variation in state investments in this shift. Oral health advocates need to be at that state table talking about how these dollars and how those resources can be used more flexibly to address a major part of the functional and health status piece of the aging of our population. Culture change in nursing homes is another area where there is discussion, and more state surveyors are actually being trained together with providers to recognize that there needs to be more flexibility. As Linda was saying on her end, she's working with state surveyors for them to understand how to pay attention to oral health flags. Surveyors have a role in terms of thinking about holistically folks who are at least living in nursing homes. Now, of course, as I said, the vast majority of elderly are not in nursing homes, but at least reaching that population and working with state surveyors and interjecting the oral health concerns is a way to get some of these issues across and at least targeting the most vulnerable. I do think that we can think about the ACA. This is the Affordable Care Act. It does not have strong language around oral health for this population, but it does have tremendous amount of service integration and care coordination models. The accountable care organizations, the independence at home models, the bundling of post-acute, acute, post-acute, and long-term care dollars for the nursing home population, and also the new duals demonstrations. 15 states have gotten planning grants to develop dual projects for their Medicare, Medicaid eligible populations. These are your targets for the most vulnerable because your highest users are going to be your MediMedi, your Medicare, Medicaid population. I do not know, because I haven't looked in these state planning grants to see if there's any language around oral health, but I can tell you that there's room because these demos can be as flexible as they want to be. And in addition to the 15 states, there are also other states that are coming in with plans to CMS. So thinking about how you might use these dual demos as interjecting some work around, if we move to the next one, work around thinking about this, particularly because many of these dual demos are going to be focusing on managed long-term care, which means that there probably will be more capitation, more integrated dollars, with a lot more flexibility to interject oral health services where typically in your fee-for-service Medicare, you're not going to have coverage. And I don't see coverage in fee-for-service in oral health for a very long time because it is seen as a cost, or as somebody was saying, unless you have a very strong evidence base around downstream cost savings, Medicare sees this as an additional benefit. On the other hand, last year was the first year that new prevention annual screening was introduced in Medicare. It is a free screening that is offered to all Medicare beneficiaries every year. Now, is there an opportunity through that preventive mechanism to start talking and building a groundswell of support for adding some preventative screening on the oral health side? That may be the one camel's nose under the tent, where you can begin. We didn't think we were going to get any kind of prevention for many years in Medicare because they're so afraid of costs. And I don't blame them. I mean, Medicare costs are out of control. But it's not the prevention that's out of control. It's the specialization. It's the MRIs. It's the meds. It's not prevention. So, you know, trying to figure out how we get some oral health interjected into prevention is probably the only way that we're going to see any expansion of Medicare other than through these managed care, long-term care, and integrated models where you have a capitation or at least a quasi-part capitation and you've got room for flexibility. I mean, in some of these models, you can put anything under the sun in there because it's so flexible that oral health would fit within those within that framework. The other area where we're seeing significant trends is attention to the workforce and talent development, although I will tell you I've been involved, as I said, I'm on an IOM committee right now, I've been very involved in the Elder Care Workforce Alliance. Very little participation from dentists and oral health or dental hygienists. We just don't have it's hard enough to get some of the other professions integrated, but I think that this interprofessional focus, which is very much a geriatric model, has got to include oral health in it, and whether there's a way to think about getting more oral health involved in the Elder Care Workforce Alliance, which has become a pretty strong advocacy organization. It's got significant support from both Atlantic Philanthropies and the Hartford Foundation. And Congress at least has been listening to it. I mean, they were able to get some provisions in the ACA that would not have been in there had it not been for that alliance. So is there room for bringing more oral health discussion into this development of the workforce, particularly as an interprofessional workforce? Finding the well elderly. I actually think I love the notion of these screenings. On the other hand, I cringe when I think that we would use nursing homes and senior centers as the two venues for providing all the information on the elderly population because the vast majority of them are in neither of those places. So we have to think about everything from physicians' offices to clinics and federally qualified health centers. We have about 60 FQHCs now that are beginning to focus more and more on the elderly. There's actually a subgroup of geriatric-oriented FQHCs that are beginning to grow, and I believe that's another area where oral health, which is recognized as a service in many FQHCs, could form some very strong partnerships. Pharmacies are a major place. Many elderly, that's where they go. They don't even go to their doctor. They go to their pharmacist to get information on meds. Senior centers, places of worship, particularly for diversity. African Americans, you want to get them at their place of worship. You're not going to go find them anywhere else. And this is true for various cultures. Retirement communities and continuing care retirement communities for the high end. And you may think the high end are better off than the low end, but to tell you the truth, there are issues across the economic spectrum in terms of oral health. Naturally occurring retirement communities, I actually think that in many places where there's density of elderly, we have some potential to do screening that's out in the community, particularly if you partner, and I'll talk a little bit about partners So if we go to the next, we're talking about where do you find the disabled elderly. Hospitals and the ER. The frequent flyers in the ER is a wonderful place to start in terms of identifying people who are at high risk. Hospice, we may think palliative care is just physical care and maybe a little emotional care. Oral health fits in there until the day that somebody dies. And more hospice is going beyond the six-month orientation. The palliative care movement is moving way out of that scope. And pain and oral health are very related in terms of how do you intervene in these areas. Low-income senior housing, this is an area we're doing a lot of work in low-income senior housing. There are thousands of properties around the country with at least 2 to 3 million elderly living in them. This is a place of high concentration. Quite honestly, I think you'll get more bang for your buck than going to a senior center by targeting some of these low-income housing properties because they serve not only the elderly living there, but also the larger community. Adult day, NORCs, and certainly, although we only have 76 PACE programs around the country, for those of you who don't know the program for all-inclusive care for the elderly, this is probably the most boutique but best model of integrated services, covers everything from soup to nuts for nursing home certifiable elderly. And some of these programs are actually doing some very good oral health within those programs. So who do you partner with? The area agencies on aging, depending on your state and your locale, are very, very strong. If you happen to be in Atlanta, for example, the ARC is one of the best aging organizations in the country. So understand what your aging network is doing in your community. That is a place to think about surveillance and partnerships around intervention. Medicaid agencies, the ombudsman programs in your state are a form of surveillance in terms of seeing problems that may be flying under the radar screen. Working with your local HUD agencies, your housing and urban development, your public health departments, adult protective services, which is another sort of place where more and more we're seeing neglect and abuse, and within that you're going to see some of these flags. And health insurance counseling programs. These are the places where people go to understand their Medicare and their Medicaid benefits. It is an opportunity to work with them to actually educate consumers and family caregivers around oral health needs. And finally, hospitals, the healthcare systems, and managed care, the long-term care providers. The housing, as I said, congregate housing to me is a major place where you're going to find large concentrations of vulnerable elderly. Geriatric care managers and financial managers are folks who are working with elderly and their families every day. Do they understand the issues around oral health? Grocery stores, one of the best programs that has been developed over the years has been through Wegmans. It's a fabulous grocery store that has partnered with area agencies and other aging network providers over the years. And again, this is where you're going to get elderly who are coming to the grocery store to shop, and it is a place for consumer education and even intervention. Banks, and then working with community advocates and even silver-haired legislatures. So the funding mechanisms, and then I'm going to wrap up because you need to understand the sort of the soup here, because there are places that you can intervene, even though there isn't necessarily strong coverage. As I said, on the Medicare side, I think on the preventive side, and on the managed care side, we have some room to do some at least piloting and to get the evidence base around cost savings as well as better quality of care and quality of life. SSI, SSP, understanding these programs and how they interact in terms of getting eligibility for programs for the elderly, the Older Americans Act. State funds, the VA, I don't know how much you all work in the VA, but increasingly this is a geriatric population that is heavily at risk. And the oral health needs in the VA are significant. It also is an area where there has been a lot of experimentation around more integrated models. Private long-term care insurance. Some of these plans are actually incredibly flexible. Is anybody talking with some of the insurers, the bigger insurers around including oral health as part of these benefits? Private foundations are interested. Grantmakers in Aging just had their national conference here in Washington last week. There are hundreds of foundations that are focusing on aging at the community level. And finally, Title VII, in terms of thinking about Public Health Service Act workforce dollars. And as we expand geriatric workforce dollars, let's make sure that we have oral health as part of that mix. So thank you very much.
Thank you very much, Dr. Stone. Okay, we have time for a few questions, so I'll open that up to the audience. Are you all that hungry? Yes, ma'am. Let me repeat the question. So was this dental insurers or medical insurers?
Dental insurers.
Okay, the question was for the ADA coalition, it didn't appear that dental insurers were active in that. Do you want to come to the mic?
Okay.
Yeah, I'll have each of the speakers come up to the mic when they're going to respond. Thank you.
I don't think that was a deliberate omission. The invitation was we broadly invited a variety of patients of organizations, but I don't believe there was anybody there from dental insurance. But it wasn't done deliberately.
Yes.
This is along the same lines, but was anybody there from long-term care, or because I noticed that when we have our sessions, and I'm as guilty of this as anybody, but we continue to have oral health people talking to oral health people, which was another item that was brought up, and we continue to do that, and we continue to discuss what we need to do, and I agree that we need to continue that. That's a good thing, but we need to go beyond that. I think we need to learn the other side. The long-term care provider's perspective, which I think the Health Aging Committee has seen that on our calls, because we don't always understand what their issues are in getting their staff trained to take care of their clients, and we can preach and preach that we need to understand the issues, but we need, at this point in time, to go beyond that. We need to have sessions that say, what are we going to do? What's the next step? So if we can do all the things we did today, then where are we going to be in 2050? What's the population going to look like? Is it going to be better? Maybe it'll be better just because the generation that will be alive then, which won't be myself and a number of people in here, they're going to maybe have a little better oral health just because they have better oral health now, mm-hmm. just the issues you brought up about fluoridation. Mm-hmm. But we don't want that just to be the trend. We have to change things now to make things so much better then, and it has to involve the dental insurance people, the long-term care providers, the people that are involved in and understand the issues on the other side of the fence. So we have education for ourselves as much as we have education to be doing, and it's a major, major undertaking, but I'd like to see more mixture when we have our presentations next year on rural health and other people coming together at sessions like this and providing how we can brainstorm and make the changes we want to see that we've been documented today.
Okay, so your question was, for the ADA coalition, what type of participation was there from the long-term care industry? You want to come to the microphone?
Yes.
Come to the microphone.
Why don't one of you speak?
I mean, I think that the ADA is doing a really great job of I represent an organization of 5,600 long-term care providers. And, we have a relationship. We have a communication strategy. We are sharing websites. And
and webinars and getting all of this out. And I think the AMDA is another, I mean, understanding strategically where you want to get to. Probably the medical directors in nursing homes are probably the best place on that score to get, because they are the ones who ultimately make the decisions around medical care in these places. But I think there needs to be more of this. But it starts with an acknowledgement that the aging network community understands the oral health needs and vice versa. And, you know, it is an ongoing process. But I actually think there was a lot of interaction. And quite honestly, my own view around the dental insurers, I don't think this is, for the elderly population, I don't think this is a dental insurer issue. I think it is an insurance issue in general, in terms of how we think about a comprehensive set. We're not going to get rid of Medicare. I mean, you know, you might hear this, but this is not going anywhere anytime soon. So the Medicare and Medicaid programs are the insurers for the elderly. And that these public payers, as opposed to the younger populations, which is not the same issue. These are the players, and they are the opportunities for trying to figure out creatively how oral health gets interjected into the larger world of healthcare, and the big H, the big public health. So, but I actually think there's been a lot of reaching out, and it doesn't mean there shouldn't be more.
Okay.